My emotions are just like the weather, raining. I'm quite sad because it's a newspaper I've been reading from a young age.
A strict new law forces the shutdown of a popular Hong Kong news organization. It's Thursday, June 24th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, U.S. officials focus on those skeptical about the COVID vaccine. The Delta COVID-19 variant is now hitting South Asia's largest country. One COVID-carrying traveler to New Zealand shuts down some of that country. Violence continues to plague Afghanistan, and Tokyo bans booze at the Olympics. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kong's sole remaining pro-democracy newspaper will publish its last edition this week, forced to shut down after five editors and executives were arrested and millions of dollars in its assets were frozen as part of China's increasing crackdown on dissent in the semi-autonomous city. More on the story from Reuters correspondent Emily Wither.
Popular Hong Kong paper Apple Daily will be printed for the last time on Thursday, calling time on a 26-year run for the pro-democracy tabloid. The decision comes after a tough year, in which the offices were raided by police and its tycoon owner and other staff were arrested under a new national security law. The paper mixes pro-democracy discourse with racy celebrity gossip and investigations of those in power. Its closure has escalated alarm over media freedom and other rights in the Chinese-ruled city. Apple Daily said the decision was based on employee safety and manpower considerations. The paper's publisher, Next Digital, said in a statement the decision to close the newspaper, which employs about 600 journalists, was taken due to the current circumstances prevailing in Hong Kong. Police last week froze assets of companies linked to the newspaper and arrested five executives. Authorities have said dozens of Apple Daily pieces may have violated the security law, which Beijing imposed on the city last year. Rights groups, media organizations, and Western governments have criticized last week's police raid on the newspaper.
Correspondent Emily Wither. On the streets of Hong Kong, there was disappointment.
If Apple Daily can't survive, then there's no press freedom. If such a persistent organization can also lose its voice, I think other media organizations will also be scared.
My emotions are just like the weather, raining. I'm quite sad because it's a newspaper I've been reading from a young age.
Apart from finance and entertainment, Hong Kong news will all be screened. I think if we look in recent years, all the papers have the same front page news. It's only Apple Daily that talks about the truth and the reality.
The silencing of a prominent pro-democracy voice is the latest sign of China's determination to exert greater control over the city, long known for its freedoms, after huge anti-government protests there in 2019 shook the government. Since then, Beijing has imposed a strict national security law, used in the arrest of the newspaper employees, and revamped Hong Kong's election laws to keep opposition voices out of the legislature. Apple Daily was founded by tycoon Jimmy Lai in 1995, just 2 years before Britain handed Hong Kong back to China, and initially was a tabloid known for its celebrity gossip. But Lai had also always portrayed the paper as an advocate of democratic values and said it should shine a light on snakes, insects, mice, and ants in the dark, according to the paper. Also in Hong Kong, a man accused of driving a motorcycle into police officers while carrying a Hong Kong protest flag became on Wednesday the first person to stand trial under the national security law. Tung Yong Kit was arrested on July 1, 2020, a day after the national security law took effect, for allegedly driving into the crowd of officers while bearing a flag that had the slogan on it, "Liberate Hong Kong, the revolution of our times." Several officers were knocked over, three sustained injuries. The slogan was often chanted during anti-government demonstrations in 2019 by protesters demanding broader democratic freedoms. A court ruled last month that Tang would stand trial without a jury, a diversion from Hong Kong's common law traditions. Under the national security law, a panel of three judges can replace jurors, and the city's leader has the power to designate judges to hear such cases. The law carries a maximum penalty of life in prison for serious offenders. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. Myanmar's junta leader attends military conference in Moscow. North Korea media say Pyongyang is not considering any contact with the U.S. U.S. Embassy in Thailand rejects American citizens' appeal for vaccine. China is gripped by insecurity, according to Australia's most senior diplomat. China does not agree. Nepal's top court removes most of the cabinet in a blow to the caretaker prime minister. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. We continue now on VOA Asia. The U.S. will not reach President Joe Biden's goal of partially or fully vaccinating 70% of adults by the July 4th Independence Day holiday. That according to the White House Tuesday. U.S. officials are focusing vaccination education efforts on Americans who remain skeptical about the vaccine. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
In the U.S., COVID-19 case numbers are down to the lowest level since March 2020. But those encouraging numbers are coming as the White House announces it will not reach an early July goal of vaccinating 70% of all American adults. One problem? Younger Americans. White House COVID-19 response coordinator Jeff Zients.
The country has more work to do, is particularly with 18 to 26-year-olds. The reality is many younger Americans have felt like COVID-19 is not something that impacts them, and they've been less eager to get the shot.
The White House has announced Tuesday that 70% of Americans over age 30 have been partially or fully vaccinated. And while the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says vaccination rates have increased in communities of color in recent weeks, U.S. lawmakers say more work needs to be done. Democratic Senator Patty Murray.
We will not reach the goals in many states and communities if we do not continue to address the hesitancy, misinformation, and other issues holding back Americans from getting vaccinated. We have to continue increasing access and addressing barriers which make it hard for people to get vaccines, especially for people of color.
And with nearly half of American evangelical Christians saying they will not take the vaccine, one theologian told lawmakers that hesitancy has a worldwide impact. Duke Divinity School professor Curtis Chang.
And at the global level, American evangelical culture is highly influential in parts of Asia and Africa. We're already exporting our misinformation and fears to the rest of the world, especially via social media.
Even with 20 to 30% of American adults unvaccinated, U.S. officials are optimistic there will not be a fourth surge of the coronavirus in the U.S. this winter. Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I don't think even under those circumstances that you're going to see things like 1,000 deaths a day. I think that is a bit much. But there is a danger, a real danger, that if there is a persistence of a recalcitrance to getting vaccinated, that you could see localized surges.
And as the U.S. was working to raise its own vaccination rates, the White House said earlier this week that its goal of sharing 80 million vaccine doses globally by the end of June is being complicated by logistical challenges. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The United States is not the only nation running into problems vaccinating its population. India's technology-driven vaccination initiative has raised concerns the country's huge digital divide is making it difficult for many people to get inoculated, particularly in the nation's vast countryside. While tech-savvy, digitally aware city dwellers have managed to get their shots, millions in rural areas are left behind because of a technology barrier. Anjana Pasricha has a report.
Those waiting at the center in North India's Kangra district could book a slot to get a COVID-19 vaccine because they had smartphones and knew how to register on the official website called Covin. Many others want the vaccine as a second wave of the pandemic ravaged the rural district, but they could not register as they do not have net connections or smartphones.
I have a simple phone. I don't even know how to operate the other phones.
Following criticism that the mandatory online process for those between the ages of 18 and 45 was excluding millions from India's inoculation drive in rural areas, the government has allowed everyone to walk in for appointments. But Manoj Sharma found that the tech-savvy still have the advantage. The numbers of those walking in are limited due to vaccine shortages, while shots are assured for those registering online. That is why Sharma is still desperately asking friends to book an online slot for him.
The government should facilitate this process for us. I am driving all day and providing an essential service.
The technology barrier prompts many to come to this facilitation center for help.
It's a problem because many people in villages are not very educated. Many don't possess smartphones and struggle with the online process.
Even rural residents with smartphones like Vivek Chand find it a challenge to get inoculated due to patchy internet connections. People in nearby towns grab the coveted vaccine slots faster.
Even if I register, I can't find a center close by to get a shot. Today, the only place where vaccines were available is miles away. Even those were restricted to those older than 45.
Such challenges have led to growing demands for administering jabs closer to villages, where two-thirds of Indians live.
Centers should be opened in each village for people to get vaccinated. This will remove all the hurdles they are facing.
Health experts say accessing the remote countryside should be a priority as vaccine shortages ease.
If you do not vaccinate them in adequate numbers, there will be a huge reservoir of susceptible persons which the virus or any new variant can attack. And ultimately, when in India's election, we managed to reach the ballot box to the remotest area, including the interior of forests, I think we ought to be able to find ways in which we can actually carry the vaccines there.
That is what these village residents want, an easily available shot to protect them from a third wave that doctors say will arrive. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
The Delta COVID-19 variant has spread quickly around the world and is now hitting Southeast Asia's largest country. That story is coming up. Stay with us on VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, as Japan Wednesday marked 1 month until the July 23rd opening ceremonies of the Tokyo Summer Olympics, hundreds of demonstrators marched through the center of the capital city, calling for the cancellation of the events. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The Delta COVID-19 variant, first identified in India, has spread quickly around the world and is now hitting Indonesia. Southeast Asia's largest country now looks at another peak as it hits the 2 million mark in confirmed cases. VOA's Gita Permatasari reports.
Hospital beds quickly fill up in this Indonesian capital. Jakarta is one of the three cities in this country that has seen a spike of new COVID-19 cases since the Muslim holiday Idul Fitri in mid-May. The spread of the Delta variant first detected in India is the likely cause. Some areas such as Kudus and DKI Jakarta and also in Bangkalan, it has been confirmed that the Delta variant or B16172 or also known as the variant from India dominates.
Varian dari India mendominasi.
Indonesia has reached 2 million total confirmed cases.
To help slow the spread,
President Joko Widodo wants to speed up vaccination to 1 million doses per day come July. But progress has been slow. The country is going to miss an earlier target of 70 million citizens vaccinated by July. Data from the COVID-19 task force from mid-June show fewer than 12 million people in Indonesia have been fully vaccinated. Among those 60 and older, fewer than 1 in 5 has been vaccinated, according to official data.
There are a few hurdles we're facing. First, not all elderly citizens are willing to be vaccinated. Turns out it's not easy to get them vaccinated. They may be worried about the side effects and comorbidities.
In June, the government made vaccination eligible for everyone 18 and older. A new target, 7.5 million people in Jakarta vaccinated by the end of August, which they say is enough to achieve herd immunity in the nation capital. For now, the nationwide restriction of public activities remain in place, but there's no plan for stricter lockdown orders like those in neighboring Malaysia.
PPKM Mikro,
micro-scale public activity restrictions are done to control COVID-19 at the roots of the problem, which is at the community level. This is more on target. But will this measure be enough? As reported by Reuters, two recent studies in Indonesia suggest the number of infected could be much higher than the official count. Lack of testing, which left cases undetected, may be to blame, says an epidemiologist who helped with the study.
Jadi kalau testingnya rendah ya.
If testing is low, result will be low. So we can compare the two. But it also indicates that our testing is insufficient in detecting transmission.
Testing kita memang belum mampu cukup banyak mengidentifikasi sebagian besar penularan.
Authorities forecast cases to peak before June is over. In the meantime, health experts are urging people to get the vaccine and urging the government to step up its testing and tracing program and to consider imposing stricter mobility restriction on its citizens. For Gita Permatasari in Jakarta, Ahadian Utama, VOA News.
After enjoying nearly 4 months without any community transmission of the coronavirus, New Zealanders were on edge Wednesday after health authorities said an infectious traveler from Australia had visited over the weekend. New Zealand has taken a zero-tolerance approach to the pandemic and continues to pursue an elimination strategy. The country's response has been among the most effective in the world. The nation of 5 million people has recorded just 26 COVID-19 deaths. However, its vaccination campaign has been far slower than in most developed countries, with just 13% of the population having received their first dose. Although there were no immediate cases confirmed as a result of the traveler's visit from Sydney to New Zealand's capital, Wellington, authorities were asking people at more than a dozen locations to self-isolate for 2 weeks and get tested. They also imposed physical distancing requirements in Wellington and restricted crowd sizes to 100 from Wednesday evening through Sunday. Officials said the traveler was linked to a Sydney outbreak of the more contagious Delta variant that originated in India. New Zealand also stopped quarantine-free travel from the Australian state of New South Wales for at least 3 days.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news alert from VOA Asia, nearly 100 carcasses of turtles with throat and shell damage, as well as a dozen dead dolphins and a blue whale, have washed ashore in Sri Lanka since a container ship burned and sank, raising fears of a severe marine disaster. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan is more than halfway finished, yet the country is plagued with violence as the Taliban extend their reach. This as the Afghan president meets with U.S. President Joe Biden later this week. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti reports from the White House.
The Taliban advances as U.S. troops leave, with the firm deadline of September. So far, the insurgents have overrun 60 districts. That was the topic in Tuesday's United Nations Security Council debate.
Most districts have been taken surround provincial capitals, suggesting that the Taliban are positioning themselves to try and take these capitals once foreign forces are fully withdrawn.
In this exclusive interview with VOA, Afghanistan First Vice President Amrullah Saleh says the Taliban have gained confidence in the absence of U.S. forces.
Well, they have this fake conviction that they have defeated the foreigners, and it's a matter of defeating the Afghan forces.
So the hurdle for the U.S. is getting the Taliban to the peace table. That will be on the agenda when President Joe Biden meets Friday with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and the High Council for National Reconciliation Chairman Abdullah Abdullah. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says they will discuss
how we can work together to ensure that Afghanistan never again becomes a safe haven for terrorist groups who pose a threat to the U.S. homeland, how we can work together to continue to implement the humanitarian assistance, other assistance.
The U.S. is providing more than $266 million in new humanitarian assistance to Afghanistan as it exits its longest war in U.S. history. According to the UN, 18 million Afghanis are in need, and nearly 5 million are internally displaced. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, at the White House.
At least 3 people have died, more than 10 are injured, in an explosion in Lahore, Pakistan, outside the house of Hafiz Saeed, a man linked to the 2008 Mumbai attacks that killed more than 170 people. VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports from Pakistan's capital, Islamabad.
The explosion outside the house of Hafiz Saeed was so strong it damaged nearby homes and several vehicles in nearby streets. Saeed is the leader of Jamaat-ud-Dawah, or JUD, an Islamist militant group operating in South Asia. It was not immediately clear if he was among the casualties. Security forces surrounded the area. Saeed's personal bodyguards were spotted around the house as well. Eyewitnesses and journalists were told to move away and cell phone signals were jammed. The head of police in Lahore, Ghulam Mehboob Dogar, said so far nothing is determined about the nature of the blast.
It could be a gas blast, could be something else, but somebody has to make a final determination as an expert's opinion.
Saeed is both on US and UN lists of sanctioned individuals. Saeed's group is blamed for the 2008 attacks that killed more than 170 people in Mumbai, India. Last year, Pakistani courts convicted Saeed in several cases linked to terrorism financing. He's serving a sentence of 5.5 years. The U.S. has offered a bounty of $10 million to anyone providing information that leads to Saeed's conviction in the Mumbai attacks. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
Making headlines in Asia, Guam is launching a vaccine tourism program to encourage citizens of neighboring countries and Americans living in East Asia to come get inoculated against COVID-19. Newspaper there reports the first group of 3 travelers was arriving on a charter flight from Taiwan. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Elton John has announced his final North American concerts for his farewell Yellow Brick Road tour. Associated Press music correspondent Margie Zaraletta reports.
Elton John has announced the final concerts he will play in the U.S. before he calls it quits. They will be stadium dates, starting with Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia on July 15th of next year. His last American shows will be 2 dates at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles on November 19th and 20th, 2022. John will resume touring this September in Berlin. He will play several U.S. arena dates that were rescheduled because of the pandemic. His final scheduled concerts, as of now, are January 27th and 28th, 2023. 1973 in Auckland, New Zealand. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Ira Melman. Make sure you enjoy the day ahead.